Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks. Dear God.
Josh, did you just say thanks when I said have a good night, everybody?
I did. I can cut that out.
Thanks.
Some of the content of the Double Minor Hockey Podcast might not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everyone. Josh and Lambrose here, welcoming you to an all-new episode of the Double Minor Hockey Podcast for Friday, March 20th, 2020. We don't really have all that much to talk about on this week's show, so let's just have some fun with it. This week, we talk about Cole Caulfield returning to the NCAA for next season. We're going to have a little fun with some rumored trades that could have happened in the Montreal Canadiens universe, but never did, and so we look at how that might have changed the course of the Montreal Canadiens franchise. And then we take a quick look around the NHL, how we have a little conversation about what happens if the NHL season does resume, how could that look like, or what it could look like if it doesn't. Brief little chat about what the salary cap next season might look like with all this season suspended, and then we're going to end the show with a quick little fun game of who wins MVP and Jack Adams if the season were to be canceled and ended today, and we go with what has happened so far. No blindside hit this week because nothing has angered us enough to that point because there's nothing going on in the world of hockey. So all of that note, before I get into the podcast, just a few little housekeeping notes. Make sure to visit anchor.fm/doubleminorhp for everything you need to know about the pod, including feeds and links to everywhere you can find us. You can also visit anchor.fm/doubleminorhp to leave us a voice message that we'll be more than happy to play in future episodes. This is where you tell us what you'd like to talk about. Literally, we're giving you the option and the opportunity to run the show. So take advantage of it, please. Make sure to follow the pod on Twitter. @DoubleMinorHP is the Twitter handle for all the latest details. You can also follow Lambrose and I @LambroseTorvanis and @JoshuaDelorme95. Make sure to hit the little follow button. That's always fun. Speaking of following buttons, last but not least, please don't forget to hit that little subscribe follow button wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. If you can, meaning if you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review. Those are also always appreciated. All right, time now for me to bring in Lambrose and talk all about the Montreal Canadiens and the National Hockey League. Lambrose, how the fuck are you in all this quarantine shit? I haven't left the house in 5 or 6 days now, I think it is. I'm about to drive myself crazy. There's only so much Madden a guy can play.
I tell you what, I think if I continue looking at my walls every day, it's I'm going to lose my mind. But
tell me about it.
I mean, listen, it's something we got to keep an eye on, and I'm hoping everybody who listens is safe and that, you know, you're enjoying whatever amount of free time you have on your own. And,
absolutely. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Don't go outside. Don't go anywhere. Honestly, people, this is all about flattening the curve is the term that people are using. The only way and the best way we can quickly and effectively neutralize this virus that pretty much the entire world is facing right now is if we do exactly that. Don't go anywhere. Stay home. Avoid social interaction. I know it's terrible, but modern technology allows us to FaceTime and talk with people that you can see. It's just not worth the risk, right? It's just and we're not talking about and if we don't want to get like Italy and France is with like everything shut down, we still have some possibilities right now. If we don't want to get to that, just volunteer to stay home. Take care of yourself. Take care of the people around you. Take care of your loved ones. Because even if you are a younger person like we are, Lambrose, the virus will not be it might not be as deadly to us as it would be for other people. But if we do get it, we run the risk of giving it to, you know, grandma, grandpa, elderly people that we come into contact with. And you don't want to do that because, well, if they die from it, you have to live with that for the rest of your life.
Of course, and I'm just gonna point out those people who are like partying in like Florida and all that stuff. Man, you guys are fucking idiots. Let's just put it out there.
I mean, yes.
When it's affecting hundreds of thousands of people, and it's gonna probably at this rate, it's gonna probably hit millions of people. You need to literally limit your outings and just quarantine yourself. You know, stay home, hang out at home, do like. Basically, whatever Josh just said, and for the love of God, I don't know why we have to continue saying this. Wash your fucking hands. I mean,
like, it's just basic fucking hygiene.
At this point, yes.
It's basic hygiene. Take a shower, wash your hands every, like, multiple times a day, be clean, and things could be somewhat decent for you.
Of course.
Exactly. And stay home. Dear God, stay home.
Yeah. No need to go out.
Because if I get coronavirus from somebody, I'm going to punch you right in the throat.
After he's done his 2-week quarantine.
No, I'll do it first.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right, enough of that. Lambros, let's talk about the Montreal Canadiens. I think every time I say this, but I think this is going to be a relatively short show because, well, there has not been any hockey played in the last week since we recorded. And I'm not one of the fans that will sit there and watch an EA Sports simulation of games that should be played by the Montreal Canadiens.
That's a little bit too much.
That's a little much for me. If I'm going to do that, I might as well just play NHL 20 myself.
Yeah.
And like I said off the top, there's only so much Madden a guy can play.
Absolutely.
My Xbox remote controller and I have become very, very close in the last few days. Mm-hmm. You know, I switch it up a little bit, playing a lot of Madden. I pulled out the good old Call of Duty World War II game. Because other than that, not much else to do.
I've just been binge watching TV.
Like, yeah.
Shows here and there. I mean, keeping myself preoccupied, obviously doing school work just because, you know, I like to be studious, but
some of us are better at it than others.
Exactly. That's the way I look at it. But again, it's a tough time, and it's, you know, when every sport is completely canceled, and like, unless you want to watch bowling, but
that's not a sport. That is not a sport.
Okay. It's a hobby. It's a lifestyle.
yes, it's a lifestyle. That's good. That is good.
Only thing I like about bowling was that that video that went viral when that guy lost his shit after he got a strike a few years ago. It's always you put on SportsCenter after.
Yes.
Oh my God, that always gets me. Just like, how can someone lose their mind over a game of bowling? But I digress.
If the title is, if you can describe it as a game, it should not be on any sports channel television.
Right. Yeah. In a way. Just like darts, but darts is intense. That's a,
have you ever... No, don't try to excuse it. Darts does not belong on TSN or Sportsnet either.
I'll be very honest with you. When it's really bored, when you have like a night where you're just completely bored and you're just looking at darts, you're like, that is freaking interesting. Like, it's a lot of precision. But again, I know what you mean. Just like
why
curling.
Why?
It's like curling.
No, that's a Canadian icon.
Okay. Now you lost me.
You're bowling on ice.
Okay, yeah. Says the guy who says bowling should be on TV. The Canadian version is accepted.
Excuse me. When when I was a kid, I used to love sitting there and watching curling on television for some reason.
Yeah, well,
it was honestly one of my favorite things to do as a kid.
I think it still is, Josh.
No, I haven't watched curling in a long time, but I'd like to go play at one point. There's a curling place not too far from here.
Go for it.
Well, I'm gonna need some buddies. So so maybe next time you and Chris come down, we'll go curling.
I don't think that's gonna be something that's easily gonna be sold on us. We're going to look at you like you're a little deranged, but it's okay.
Hey, we can have fun with it. No. Well, knowing me, I'll probably drop the fucking thing on my toe.
Throw the rocks at one another. I'd rather just throw the football in the backyard.
Yeah, well, you're not the one that has to go diving for the fucking balls.
Hey, man, when I throw it right at your chest, it's not my fault, it just rebounds off of you.
What do I look like? Julian Edelman?
Why not?
Yeah, okay, why not? I could be a running back. I could be a running back, but I can't be a wide receiver.
I'll give you 4 yards a game.
I will give you a solid 4 yards a game. Put me in, coach.
Fourth and inches, I'm your guy.
Yeah, yeah, fourth and inches, I'm your guy. Yeah, exactly. what would we do? What are we, honestly, life without sports is just not life.
It's tough.
It is tough.
Luckily for us who also like football, we have NFL free agency, so that's keeping us sort of...
Oh, yeah, because seeing Tom Brady in a Bucs uniform hasn't driven me up the wall enough as it is.
Well, you know what? Like you said, it was expected. It was going to happen sooner rather than later.
Okay.
And I don't think I just didn't think Belichick was going to give him $30 million a year.
I didn't think so either. All right, this isn't a football podcast, and I'm getting upset again. Let's talk Cole Caulfield. News came out, I don't even know what day it is today, so a couple days ago, that the young scoring forward, the young sniper, would be returning to Wisconsin of the NCAA next season, which to me comes as a bit of a surprise, mainly because we saw Alex Turcotte turn pro. We saw Keandre Miller turn pro with Los Angeles and the New York Rangers, respectively. Okay. So Wisconsin, to me, now is, depending on how things are going to shape up for next season with draft-eligible players and NCAA commitments for next season, Wisconsin is left with only Cole Caulfield as a pure top-up, like high echelon player.
There's also that, there's also that Hathaway kid.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's going to be a first-round pick.
Yes, but my point is he's not in the same group as he wouldn't be put in the same group as Caulfield, Miller, and Turcotte. That's what my point was.
That's what
I meant. And so that part of it surprised me. I thought once we saw those two turn pro, I was kind of thinking he might just say, yeah, I'm out of here. At worst, he'll play in – he was thinking I'll play in Laval of the American Hockey League next year. But very happy to see him accept – the Canadians' recommendation that he stay
1 year
longer in the NCAA to keep on developing at that level. And I kind of wanted to turn this into a broader conversation with you, Lambros.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of prospects in the Canadians' recent history, top-end prospects, get rushed into the NHL. We saw it with Alex Galchenyuk.
Yeah.
We saw it with, I'm drawing a blank, Jesperi Kotkaniemi. I was expecting to see it again with Cole Caulfield because this team is struggling to score goals, has struggled to score goals for years, and you have one here who basically only scores goals. So my question to you, Lambros, is what does this mean in your mind that the Canadiens brass wanted Caulfield to stay in the NCAA?
Well, you mentioned high-end players, and the players that you mentioned that they rushed were all obviously top three picks, right? When you look at it, Galchenyuk was a top three pick. Kotkaniemi's a top three pick. So I think in their minds, they were expecting immediate help right off the bat. And if we look back at their stats, they weren't bad players. I think both of them averaged relatively a point every two games on average, and I could be wrong in terms of the ratio, but it was very, very close to that. And for guys like, I'll just use Kotkaniemi as the primary example here. For a guy like him playing under 14 minutes a night on average, he was doing a very good job. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, he was doing fairly better than what a lot of people were expecting from him, especially given the circumstances that he was dealing with. Now, regards to Caulfield, I think I don't want to bring it up, but don't be so, maybe another reason why they kept him there is for him to maybe grow into his body a bit more. I mean, if Cole Caulfield was 5'11", 6 foot, could be a different story. And have this.
If Cole Caulfield was 5'11", 6 foot, he would not have been available at 15 last year in the draft.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, it's not a criticism to the player. It's just unfortunately his development, and it's just puberty at this point. It's just his growth in general. So he could end up being 5'9" or 5'10" by the time he's 22 years old. We don't know. I mean, But be that as it may, the guy is 5'7". The kid is still very thin. He's still a small guy. And I think it's best for someone like him to continue growing into his body, bulking up in a way, just very similarly to Alex DeBrincat, very similarly to Brad Marchand, another small guy. But, you know, Brad Marchand is 5'9", but he's relatively 180, close to 180, 185, not to say bigger. So I think the right decision, as always, is to be patient with these kids, no matter who it is. Listen, you take Jesperi Kotkaniemi, and I think we've spoke about this in the past. The most NHL-ready player in that draft was Brady Tkachuk. We're talking in terms of body, in terms of physique. Brady Tkachuk was like a man amongst boys in comparison to everybody else in that draft. He was, if you put a pair of skates on him right after the draft, he was the most NHL-ready. Six one, six two, over 200 pounds right off the bat.
You mean between him and Kotkaniemi, right?
I'll even say within those top four picks.
Really? I mean, I still would have taken Svechnikov.
I don't, like, I mean, I understand. And, like, if you want to look at it between the pick the Canadians had, if they wanted to go for the most NHL-ready and the guy who was going to give them immediate help, it should have been Tkachuk at that point, if that's what they wanted. But if they're taking Kotkaniemi, they're looking at maybe addressing a position of need down the road. But also, this guy could end up being a top-end player for a decade per se.
So, then why does he play in the NHL last season?
I think we spoke about this.
Sporadically. That was more of a rhetorical question, right? And I guess this could fall into a maybe of a learning from past experiences with Cole Caulfield, where it comes to, okay, we all agree, yes, Jesperi Kotkaniemi was third overall draft selection and all that. That was a bit of a reach for the Montreal Canadiens at that time, right?
No, yeah, absolutely. I think
you know what I mean? My point is he's a third overall pick, but he was not NHL ready like most third overall picks are.
I'll put it in a way that'll make sense. He was the third pick overall, but he wasn't the third best prospect.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, exactly.
That's the way. It's just like we said in football, you know?
Well,
I'll
make it NHL for you. Caulfield was the 15th overall selection. He's not 15th in terms of talent in last year's draft.
He was at least a top 10 prospect.
If he's 6 feet tall, he's top 10 pick.
I would even say higher.
No, that's my point. He's a top 10
for talent. Sure. He's a top 10 talent. Absolutely. Unfortunately, we have the height issue. So when you look at it like that completely, this team need to be patient with this guy. That's
absolutely
what it comes down to. And unfortunately, and this is where I'll bring up Kotkaniemi again, the Montreal Canadiens should have learned their lesson with what they did with Galchenyuk. I mean, with a kid that highly rated, he was a talented player coming out of the draft. And he was at many people were saying that he was probably the best prospect available in the draft. The only issue with him was that he was coming off a major ACL injury, if I'm not mistaken. Nonetheless, a guy like Jesperi Kotkaniemi, what was the purpose of him playing last year? To see what he was like? Okay, give him the 9-game trial. At the end of the day, it's best, like I always say, to be patient with your prospects, especially your first-round prospects. Give them the opportunity to develop in junior or in Europe. Give them the opportunity to compete for their host country's world junior team. Give them that experience and let them grow and let them continue developing and let them grow into their bodies, as opposed to immediately putting them in the NHL and playing them less than 15 minutes a night. Unless you're a once-in-a-generation like hockey player or the first overall pick or a guy like Alex Ovechkin, there's no need for a certain player to be in the NHL right away.
I always go back to the Ken Holland Detroit model.
Yeah, exactly.
Overripe.
And what made them so successful?
Their prospects were overriped and not underdeveloped.
Exactly. You know, you look at, you praise Ken Holland for finding guys like Zetterberg, finding guys like Datsuk in the late rounds. But if you saw what how long it took for them to be developed, it took them 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So when you look, when you factor that in, you're like, okay, these guys turned out to be great hockey players, but regardless if they were a late round pick or not, they were given the an X amount of time to properly develop, properly grow, and properly learn their skill and their craft before ever coming onto the ice in the NHL. And unfortunately, a lot of teams have this issue, and a lot of teams, we'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens, do not have this tendency of just, oh, we'll play him when if he proves to us that he can prove that he can play in the NHL. It's a load of bullshit. I could shine for 4 games, but I can suck for 56.
Not just that, and I want, if it's a high end prospect, I don't want them barely playing, like barely being able to survive. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, and I've said this so many times before, I don't want to see a prospect in the NHL, a young player in the NHL, until I've seen him dominate mm-hmm. at a previous level.
You mentioned this with Suzuki.
Yes, he dominated in the OHL last season.
Yep.
And dominate doesn't even come close to giving him the proper amount of credit.
Oh, he was the best player.
He was on fire. Mm-hmm. He was a man amongst boys.
Yeah.
That's what I need. And look at him this year. Sure, he hit a wall a little bit towards in the last month or so. But he is right up there in terms of rookie scoring. He's not at the top, but he's done fairly well for himself. Mm-hmm. Much better than I think a lot of people ever expected him to. Mm-hmm. Mainly because, if you look at Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar, I don't know who compares to Rantanen, MacKinnon, Landeskog on the Canadiens roster, or Patterson and Besser,
Miller, Horvat,
all that stuff, right? And so when you look at the players that he's played with for the vast majority of the season, they're not, I'm not, nothing against those guys. They're very good, they're good hockey players in their own right, but not even close to the same amount of talent on the Montreal Canadiens that there is on the Colorado Avalanche or on the Vancouver Canucks, right? So that's why I was excited to see Nick Suzuki come in this year, because he did it. He did just what I want them to do. He dominated, and he showed at training camp and through the early parts of the regular season that he was ready and capable of playing in the NHL, and not just playing. He was able to compete and play, you know, good minutes in the NHL. Jesperi Kotkaniemi looked like a kid playing out there last season for so much of it. Mm-hmm. He still did.
Yeah.
So many nights you see him get manhandled, and he just looked like he did not look like he fit. I relate it to as if Vancouver had taken Elias Pettersson and put him straight into the NHL in the first year. Mm-hmm. Now look at him.
You bring up Vancouver, and the only thing I want to mention about Vancouver is that when you look, like, I mean, we can shit on Jim Benning all we want, and I still continue to shit on Jim Benning, but what he's been able to do when it came to not only proper development, but the way he obviously drafts, the way he handles his high-end picks, you know. Quinn Hughes, people forget, he played an entire college year after he got drafted. He only came for, like, I think the last handful of games towards the end of the season.
Yes, once his season was over.
Same with Brock Besser.
Yes.
And Elias,
I think
Pettersson,
Brock Besser played 2 years in.
Yeah, I was going to say at least a year.
I think it was two years for Brock Besser.
Elias Pettersson played a full year in Sweden or in Europe before coming to the NHL. Thatcher Demko, we always say about the development of goalies, and obviously it's a completely different comparison, but highly rated prospect goalie in his respective draft.
It took
a
long time to come out.
I would like to say 5 years of development, and that includes at least 2 years as a starter in Utica. So it's look where Vancouver is. I don't think they're in a playoff spot right now, but they're at least competing for one.
But just because you threw it out there, Thatcher Demko played 3 full seasons at Boston College. Mm-hmm. 2 seasons in Utica.
Yeah.
2.5, really. And really only made the jump this season.
Right, but
again, full time.
Listen.
And he was drafted in 2014. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. 2014. That's 5 years of development exactly before he makes a jump completely this year.
The problem with a lot of people, and I think I blame a lot of the media with this, because they are, when it comes to, if they don't see immediate results,
he's a bust.
He's a bust, exactly. The one thing I've even said this to you, you evaluate a hockey player and where they stand at the age of 23, 24. That's when you evaluate, especially for a guy like Kokanyemi, a guy like Suzuki, a guy like Paling, these high-end prospects, a guy like Cole Caulfield. You evaluate them when they're at an age where they have enough seasons under their belt, they're mature enough, they're at maybe considered the best shape of their life, they grew into their bodies, and you evaluate them from there. No one's criticizing Alex Barkov now. And how old is he? 25? 26? You look at his first couple of years in the league, he wasn't a second overall pick material. Not even close. Leon Draisaitl, his first year, he sucked.
Barkov's 24, yeah.
Barkov's 24. And what is he? Some people consider him a superstar hockey player.
He is.
Leon Draisaitl is leading the league in points. His first season, he was atrocious. He wasn't great by any means necessary. So having an opportunity to be patient with your prospects is crucial. And when I look at that and I evaluate it, I think a lot of people just need to just shut the fuck up. And no, but seriously, let them develop them the way they need to be developed. Don't just throw them into the wolves and expect them to do greatness. You know, Nick Suzuki dominated the OHL last year, and he's proven that this year, you know, he put up, I think, 41 or 42 points, that, hey, he can grow from this, and he can, as of next season, he can keep this momentum going. A guy like Kokanyemi, you know, playing him a limited amount of minutes, and then obviously the injuries and all that stuff, you need to give this guy an opportunity to develop properly. Same with Paling. Same with Cole Caulfield when he comes in, and whichever high-end prospect they take this year. It sounds so obvious, but for a lot of people, it seems like I'm speaking gibberish at times.
Yeah. We'll wrap up the Caulfield prospects mm-hmm. conversation with just excuse me, with just the notion that I'm happy to see, I think we're both happy to see Caulfield in the NCAA next year. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to see the Montreal Canadiens taking a more patient approach with a top-end prospect.
Absolutely. I think.
And I really cannot wait to see what he's going to do in his second season in the NCAA.
Well, yeah, I mean, he lit it up. I mean, for a freshman, he put up 19 goals. It's pretty incredible for a kid of his age. It's very, 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 very impressive.
Yeah. So. Yeah. All right. Let's have a little fun, Lambros. Let's have fun. Because life is just too depressing. As you take a sip of water.
Apple juice.
You mentioned this to me a bit today about a book about trades that never happened, mm-hmm. which got us thinking. Trades in recent, let's say recent in the last decade. Well, yep. last. Two decades. Let's say two decades.
Let's put 15 years.
Yeah, in the last 15 years, trades that almost happened in the mm-hmm. Montreal Canadiens organization. I have a list of four. Some are known. Some of them are well known. Some of them are more recent than others. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the most recent one.
Okay.
Because honestly, I don't even know in what order the other three came in.
I can tell you.
Yeah, I know you could, but whatever. The summer that brought us the exodus of Lars Zeller mm-hmm. and the, as I see you typing on the Google Doc, the order of the trades, exodus of Lars Zeller, the importation of Andrew Shaw, and the exodus of PK Subban. At the time of the trade, PK Subban, who of course traded 1-for-1 to the Nashville Predators for Shea Weber. I just want to put that out there. 1-for-1, that's the trade. In good old Bob McKenzie fashion.
Habs won that trade, by the way.
Yes, but could have been. If I don't laugh, I'll cry. A few days before Mark Bergevin accepted this trade, there was an offer put to him, reportedly, from Jim Benning and the Vancouver Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
It was for Chris Tanev.
Yeah.
Bo Horvat.
Yeah.
And a first overall pick. A first round pick.
Fifth overall.
Which was fifth overall. With the Vancouver Canucks used to draft Olli Juolevi. But that is the year that when Montreal Canadiens drafted Mikhail Sergachev ninth overall. Lavers, could you imagine having two top 10 picks?
Remember that draft?
Do you remember who went sixth, Lambros?
I do, and that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty good.
So, when you look at it...
I feel like you should put it out there in case people aren't entirely sure.
The sixth pick was Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that provides size, strength...
Grit. Emotion.
Truculence. Testosterone.
A good old-fashioned hockey player. He's a Tkachuk.
It's a Brian Burke type of hockey player. That's why they took him.
that draft was stacked.
Oh yeah, that was a fantastic draft.
Stacked.
Was that that was the Matthews draft, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah, because Dubois went third that year. Yes. So the rumor was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, so that trade would have gone through had Columbus not taken Pierre-Luc Dubois at three. That trade was going to go through.
Yes.
Because
the Canadians were confident that they could have gotten Dubois at five.
Yes. Because according to a lot of people, the draft was supposed to be as follows. Toronto was going to take Matthews. Winnipeg was going to take Laine.
Yeah.
Columbus was supposed to take Jesse Puljujärvi. Edmonton was supposed to take Mikhail Sergachev at four. That was the rumor that they were going to go after Sergachev, who was, I think, the first defenseman taken off the board. No, it was Juolevi.
No, Juolevi was.
So it was going to be Sergachev at four. That was the rumor. And at five, Vancouver was going to trade that pick to Montreal. So that Montreal would have had the fifth pick and the ninth pick. So they wouldn't even have taken Tkachuk, but they would have gotten a Francophone number one center.
honestly, even when Columbus took Dubois, wouldn't the idea of Matthew Tkachuk still interest you?
Absolutely.
Like, if you're general manager?
Absolutely. Listen, there's a lot of... Because what that would have done, it would have changed so much of the Montreal Canadiens. If you break it...
You don't get Shea Weber. That's the big... Let's just put that out there, right?
Of course.
That's the number one. But you're bringing in Chris Tanev, an established right-handed shot defenseman, top four.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Horvat immediately slots in as your number two center.
Yep.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever they would have used to with that draft pick, whether it would have been Dubois or Tkachuk.
I think it would have been Dubois.
Yeah, but my point was, even if they had made that trade with Dubois off the board.
Supposedly they took Tkachuk. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So there's your number there's your number one left wing.
Yeah. And that defense, you would have taken in the ninth pick, you could have taken.
You still get Sergachev.
Yeah.
Or even if Sergachev had been off the board, there were defensemen by the names of Charlie McAvoy. That year. You know, like there was
I didn't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't get
why
it
that
either.
Didn't go through. Because when you break it down, the Canadiens would have gone three assets.
Major assets.
You know,
two major assets and a very good asset.
Yeah, you can put it that way. I think
Chris Tanev is a major asset, but he's a very good. He's a very reliable, thought forward defenseman. You know what? He's a Mark Bergevin type defenseman.
Yeah, exactly.
He makes no mistakes.
He's a Petrie.
Yes.
And I wouldn't have no problem with having Jeff Petrie as the number one defenseman on the right side, and then have Chris Tanev as the number two. If that led me to get Bo Horvat and a fifth pick overall, are you kidding me?
And then even go further than that, right? So let's say you do draft Matthew Tkachuk.
Right.
Do you then feel the need to trade Sergachev for Drury?
No. Absolutely not.
Right? Because there's that number one left wing you need.
Absolutely. You know, that's another way to look at it. You know,
such a domino effect, right?
Oh, definitely. If that trade happened, I think if Dubois, obviously, if the trade still went through with Dubois still going to Columbus.
But even then, if Dubois comes in, mm-hmm. you're still not trading Sergachev for Drouin, because there's your superstar French Quebecer.
Face of the franchise. Yep, that's true.
Which Bergeron has admitted to saying, that's why they traded for Drouin.
Of course. I mean, listen, it's the writing was on the wall.
And I like Jonathan Drouin. I know you're not a big fan of him right now. I like Jonathan Drouin. I think he still has untapped potential. I still would not have traded a young left-handed shot defenseman who really looks like he's really now coming into it.
But that's why I don't like it. Like, I mean, I think is he a good hockey player? Well, listen, he's talented.
Well, no, that's my point. Yeah, that's my point, right? I like Jonathan Drouin. I still would not have made that trade.
No, for the price he paid, no way, no chance. That's a little bit too much for my liking. With that, at the end of the day, I think what could have been, we would be talking about the Canadiens in a different,
very different.
Speaking
of what could have been. Mm-hmm. This one's a bit of a head scratcher to me, Lambros, because I read this online, and from what I gather, the Montreal Canadiens are the ones that turned down this trade.
Okay, but wait, what year was it? You remember?
No.
What you read?
Oh no, I mean I could find it, but whatever.
Okay.
The Montreal Canadiens turned down this trade because then general manager Bob Gainey did not want to give up the young player that would have been in this trade. This trade would have been Montreal bringing in Matt Sundin in exchange for Chris Higgins and a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bob Gainey didn't want to give up Chris Higgins.
Hey, you forget how good Chris Higgins was at one point.
Yes. Yes. Matt Sundin was okay.
He was a very, very good hockey player.
You know, like, he was okay.
Listen, I can. The only thing I say, I mean, I don't know which first pick it was. I don't know the year it was taken. I think it would have still been a low pick because late 2000s, the Canadiens were pretty, we're always in a playoff position. So it would have probably been like a pick in the 20s, but whatever. But hey, man, having Sundin and Koivu down the middle, that would have been pretty enticing if you ask me. get that number one big center.
And speaking of number one big centers.
Oh, we're going to the third one.
Because I don't really give a shit about Chris Higgins.
Okay, this is the mother load right here.
This is the mother load. And a lot of people know about this trade.
Oh, I think it's
talked about. It is the what could have been, and it is the thank God the other team said no.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Thank God there was a 50-50 on this one.
The trade was Montreal trading Carey Price, PK Subban, mm-hmm. Max Pacioretty, and a first-round pick. This was in the, I think this was in the 2009 offseason.
Yep, 2009, because it was the year the Canadiens were hosting the All-Star game.
Yes. So that would have been a 2010 pick?
2009 still. It was 2009 first.
Okay. I don't know who they took in 2009. Wasn't that
the draft?
No, that was it?
Louis LeBlanc.
Whatever. Anyway, regardless. Carey Price, PK Subban, Max Pacioretty in a first to Tampa Bay for Vincent LeCavalier. And mm-hmm. that is it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else.
Yeah.
Then general manager of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Brian Lawton, probably could not have said yes to this faster. He probably thought this was April Fool's coming early. He says yes to the trade. The owners at the time of the Tampa Bay Lightning went back to him and said, yeah, we're not giving up a franchise player. Mm-hmm. That would have brought in three... potentially four, because they probably wouldn't have drafted Louis LeBlanc.
No, probably Chris Kreider.
franchise players. Could you imagine?
And you put them with Stamkos.
Well, not just that. No, Lambros, they would never have been bad enough to get Stamkos.
Yeah, they had him already.
Was that? Oh, that's true. It's 2008.
Yeah.
Then they don't get Hedman.
Well, yes, they would have. You forget these guys were young because PK was still young.
That's true.
If they didn't get Hedman, they'd probably get maybe a Duchesne or an Evander Kane.
Yeah,
but you see what I mean.
Yeah. Okay. So could you imagine where Montreal would be right now without Carey Price? Without PK Subban, which would be without Shea Weber, without Max Pacioretty, which is without Nick Suzuki and Thomas Tatar.
Yep. We would have had Halak. The only silver lining of this trade would have probably have fired both Gainey and Gauthier quicker than anything else.
Yeah.
Like when you look at it logically, getting Vincent LeCavalier, like when you're a kid, because when this happened, we were maybe what, 14? Not even, probably even younger, 12, 13 years old. You know, Vincent LeCavalier at the time, you know, Francophone, big name guy, everybody knows.
Superstar.
Everybody knows Vincent LeCavalier. We didn't know what the fuck a contract was.
We didn't know what Carey Price was going to be, what PK Subban, like we didn't care.
No, I never heard of it. I didn't hear PK Subban's name until like 2012. Like I only, like once they had that magical run, you know, Pacioretty at that time, he wasn't what he is now. He was, he had at one point a record of like 3 goals in 35 games.
Let's not forget, Pacioretty was a second round pick.
No, Pacioretty was the first round pick, Josh.
He was.
Yes, he was. PK Subban was the second round.
Yeah, right. I got him backwards. Yes.
Yeah. The only thing, like, I mean, I think a lot of people knew Carey Price simply because he played a full year the year before and he was their starting goalie at that point. Be that as it may, they had Halak in the system. So the trade itself, obviously, at the time, like, I mean, I'm saying, and again, bear with me, at the time, Gainey probably said, okay, we have Halak, which is fine. And Halak turned out to be a pretty solid goalie. At the end of the day, he's not Carey Price, but a solid goalie. He's giving up, obviously, a top-end defensive prospect, and he's giving up a superstar goalie. But you know what? And at the time, you can say he's giving up probably a secondary scorer for a perennial French superstar centerman. And obviously, that would have hit shit would have hit the fan specifically on that fucking contract that he was given. And secondly, LeCavalier was performing that way because look at the team around him. He had Martin St. Louis, who was still playing pretty darn good hockey. Oh, man, it's really hard to sit here and see. I don't know what Tampa Bay was thinking when they said no to that trade.
Well,
and
there's a reason those guys are no longer owners of the team, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was when we're talking about a team that could have gotten a lot better than what they are now, instantly. And you talk about like the potential chain reaction. Where would the Canadians be? It's very interesting to see where the Canadians would have been. Hey, they might have won a cup earlier. Who knows? Maybe they would have brought in a GM who was more competent, a coach who was more reliable.
To get into all that.
But you get the gist.
I know.
I can't believe that almost happened though. Looking back at it.
Yeah. All right, Lambros. What's the last trade you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, I heard about this earlier today, and it really caught my attention. This was the year the Canadians finished first, which is something to be said because that happened.
I don't remember that far back.
It was 2008. It was a magical year.
That's the joke.
Yeah, I know. Alex Kovalev was one of the best hockey players. Still is one of the best hockey players.
Guy Carboneau was the next...
Toll Blake. Scotty Bowman.
I always liked Guy Carboneau as a coach.
He was okay. You know, you look back at it.
He's probably the next coach of the Montreal Canadiens, to be honest with you.
Jesus Christ. What are we going to do this fucking thing again? Like a coaching carousel. It's like, you look at people who worked with RDS the last few years.
Exactly. Maybe no. You maybe have Guy Boucher coming in at some point.
Wow. Imagine that. Anyways.
Take it from me. Don't do it.
Be that as it may. Team was obviously the best team in the East at that point. And they were also the runner-ups to acquiring, at that point, the best player available, which is someone that a lot of us know, named Marian Hossa. The trade was, if I remember correctly, Canadians were offering Mikhail Grabowski, who was a prospect at the time. I still can't believe he played for the Habs. I can't believe, I completely forget Grabowski was on this roster at one point.
Who'd they trade him for?
Greg Patterin.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did. But Greg Patterin was a highly rated defensive prospect out of
No, Grabowski Michigan. Went to Toronto, no?
Yeah, Patterin was drafted by Toronto.
Oi.
Yeah.
Oi. Carry on.
So it was Mikhail Grabowski, Maxime Lapierre, Michael Ryder, and a first for Marian Hossa. Obviously, that trade never went through. Pittsburgh acquired him along with Pascal Dupuis for Eric Christensen, Colby Armstrong, Angelo Esposito in a first, and Pittsburgh ended up making the Stanley Cup final that year, losing it 6-2 Detroit. Josh, I'm going to ask you a very point-blank question. The Montreal Canadiens acquired Marian Hossa. Would they have made it to the Cup final?
Lambros, I don't remember that far back. That's the year they lost to Boston, wasn't it?
It was the year they beat Boston in the first round, and then they met R.G. Umberger and the Philadelphia Flyers.
Oh, yeah.
And they lost in five.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Would a trade like that would have... I think if they would have made a trade like that, obviously they would have given them much more... a much-needed boost offensively. Obviously, a guy like Marian Hossa is a pretty sensational hockey player, to say the least.
So I just looked up the Grabowski trade tree.
Fucking shit. Was I right? Was it for Patterin?
And a second.
Oh, they got a second. Okay.
Which was then traded.
Okay.
To Chicago.
For Robert Lank.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Then, funny enough, if we follow that pick.
Oh, God.
Toronto reacquired it.
For Chris Versteeg.
No, for Calgary's second pick in 2011.
Okay.
And their own third-round pick in 2011, so that they could then trade it as part of the package for Phil Kessel.
Oh, and that pick turned out to be Tyler Knight.
Hold on. Then it was...
Jared Knight, something like that, something Knight.
Jared Knight, yes, who yeah. I don't think he ever played a game in the league.
No, he never played.
No, no. And that's one thing you should probably never do as a fan of a team is go on Wikipedia and look at drafts and what could have been.
Oh, yeah.
Because...
A lot of teams probably banged their head. A lot of GMs, for sure.
Well, you know, like that same year was when Montreal drafted Jared Tenorti.
Jared Tenorti, yeah. Wasn't Kuznetsov taken that year?
Yep.
Yeah, it was taken that
three,
year.
Three, four picks later.
Yeah.
Hayes also.
I can say that they took McCarron and then pick right after was Shea Theodore.
Yeah. Justin Falk went in the second round.
Yeah, a lot of misses on a lot of players. Kucherov went in the second round out in his respective draft year, too.
Klingberg went in the fifth.
Yep.
Freddie Anderson went in the seventh.
No, he went back into the draft. He went to the third.
Okay. That makes more sense because that was upsetting. Oh, yeah. He was drafted by the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Fucking Hurricanes. All right, moving on. Labros, were you done about Hossa? Sorry.
I'm done about Hossa.
I kind of got sucked. So I'm going to get off of Wikipedia.
It's a lot of fun to think about these trades that never happened.
You say fun. I say depressing. Yeah. Ah, that's enough. Labros, let's take our first and only break of the podcast. On the other side, we'll talk a little bit about some stuff going on in the National Hockey League, and then we're going to get the fuck out of here.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Lambros, we are back for our second and final segment of this week's edition of the Double Minor Hockey Podcast, talking storylines around the National Hockey League and how such storylines might impact Montreal Canadiens. With the season being on hiatus, potentially in potentially close to being canceled, as we've now seen the CHL has canceled all remaining hockey games for the remainder of the regular season. If they return to action, it will be to play the playoffs. So we are still, the ECHL is canceled also. So we're still waiting to see what the NHL might do in this regard. But regardless of what they do, I think it could be fair to say that the cap will not be going up, because I think there are going to be some serious financial ramifications because of all this. Money's lost, earnings lost, I just got a text message.
Fair enough.
Fuck, I'd have lost my train of thought. Regardless, the situation that we are in will impact the National Hockey League and how the National Hockey League puts forward their salary cap next year. So let's say the salary cap stays at $81,500,000 for next year. That would leave the Canadians with roughly $18 million.
Roughly.
Roughly.
Yeah.
Restricted free agents this summer, we're looking at Max Domi, Charles Hudon, and Xavier Ouellette. Oh, and Victor Mete. Sorry.
Okay.
Victor Mete. And a few minor leaguers and Jake Evans and stuff like that, but those are not contracts that are going to break the bank. There really is only two of note in that is Max Domi and Victor Mete. The team has played Victor Mete for much of his career as a top four defenseman.
Much to Josh's dismay.
Yep. And so Victor Mete is probably going to want to be paid like a top four defenseman.
No. I would give him.
Well, I understand that, but my.
Well, how much would you give him?
But hold on. My point is, his agents should be fired if they don't walk into the negotiations being like, okay, for the past 4 years, 3 years, you've been talking up my client and playing him top 4 minutes, top pairing minutes alongside your captain, alongside your best defenseman. Well, the number better start with 3.5. And it probably should be a lot closer to 4.
You see, that's where I say no.
Well, I understand that. Would you give him $3.5 million?
That's the most I would give him. Yeah. The most.
So I could see Victor Mete signing a short-term deal.
Yeah, like a 3-year deal.
In and around 2.9, 3 million.
Right. Yeah.
Probably an AAV of... let's say 3 million. It's a 3-year deal. Let's say year one at 2.75, year two at 3 million, and year three at 3.25.
Yeah, exactly. Just you like know, fluctuating like towards
fluctuating
the end.
Fluctuating towards the end, and then we deal with it in 3 years, right? I think Absolutely. That's the most likely scenario. I think that's, and really, that should be the most realistic scenario for the Montreal Canadiens, because you cannot give him anything remotely close to 4x4.
Oh, hell no.
You can't. And that's what that's what it's probably – a long-term deal is probably going to start at 4 years, and it's probably going to start close to $4 million.
3x3 is perfect for him.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, if you want to look at it, the logistics, 3x3 is perfect for him because, I mean, although he's been playing top 4 minutes, it's not as if he's been producing like a top four defenseman. If you want to compare, let's not get ourselves – he's not averaging 40 points a season to make that assessment. Plus, he's 21. He's just coming off his entry-level contract. He's a guy that has been a consistent staple on the Canadiens when healthy. And not for anything. It's his first year they scored fucking goals.
I know.
So, I'm happy for him. Don't get me wrong. But let's not sit here and say, I'm going to start breaking the bank for Victor Mete.
Absolutely
like him.
Not.
But the most I'd ever give him, most I'd give him right now, is $3 million a year. 3.5, excuse me, but a $3 million AAV.
Yeah.
So that leads to obviously the bigger fish, which is Max Domi, where obviously we don't know the negotiation process will go, but from the looks of it, had a hell of a first year. I think like Josh and I could agree on, he played a little bit, he exceeded the expectations. He was a bit, what's the saying, Josh, about when you play better than what you're expected, like overachiever. He overachieved last season, this year he's a little bit, he hit a little bit more down back to earth. having what is it, 44 points, 45 points. He's going to finish with at least close to 60 points if he continues this way. That negotiation process is going to be interesting, to say the least. Yeah. Considering the uncertainty, considering the term, I think that's going to be a big pick, big thing. We don't even know if he's going to stay with Montreal. Which,
what does that contract look like in your mind?
Like, what would I give Max, or what I think it will be?
Both.
Fuck. I'd give him 4 years, about 5.5. I think it's I think at least $2 million more or something like that than what he's currently being paid. Number one. Number two, he's getting 4 years on this deal, which you could sit here and say he's still young. You can keep him. He could be a secondary scorer, which I think he is. He's not the main focus type of guy, and you're giving him a pretty decent contract. You have to compare him to other players in the league that are in the similar position as he is and balance it out from there. But I think 5.5 million for 4 years is, I think, more than enough for Max Domi. Because if he's going to sit here and continue using that, or if his bargaining chip is the first year, it's not a pretty good bargaining chip, because you have to look at it as an overall. Because if he replicated with 80 points this year, different story. We're talking here probably upwards of 7 million, but you have to be realistic. I think 4 years, 5.5 million a year is more than enough for Max Domi. I don't know what you think.
Do you think he signs that?
That's the thing.
Because I don't.
I know you don't.
I think any Max Domi contract for him has to start with a 6.
It's hard to give us. It's hard to give 6 million. Because, again, if he replicated and if he was consistent in both years, if he averaged, let's say, 65 points.
Would you do 3 times 6?
Maybe. It's a big maybe. Because it also depends on what I do with Mate.
And then I don't even know if he does 3 times 6.
I think he wants term. He said it before, he wants to be in Montreal for a long time. But do you give him more term but less salary?
I think anytime you're looking at term for Domi, that number is going to have to start with 6 in his mind.
It's a tough predicament, because I'm going to say it until, like,
do you have his stats in front of you?
I don't. You want me to put them up?
No, that's fine.
I got it. I'll tell you right now. His first year, he put up, I think, 72 points,
yeah.
His second year, well, currently thus far, he has 44 points in 71 games. So it's not like as if it's around the same ballpark. Because if he was at 64 points, different story. He's still a good hockey player. He's still someone that a lot of people like. I like Max Domi. I think he's a very good hockey player. And be that as it may, and he's making 3.15 this year. So when you look at it from that perspective, if the season were to end today, if you're Mark Bergevin, you want to bring him back, which I think I wouldn't be surprised he wants to. Both sides have to be realistic. I think Mark will probably lowball him at first and then work his way up. But at the end of the day, is Max Domi a $6 million guy? No. Is he a $5.5 million guy? I think so. That's the predicament here.
Yeah.
It's how highly valuable he believes he is. So, and I don't mind giving him term. 4 or 5 years, I have no problem. The highest I'd go, if he signs a 5-year deal, I give him maybe 5.9. Because it's term, it's longer. But apart from that, if I start hearing between six and seven million, unless it's a short-term contract, no. It wouldn't make sense. So with that said, you know, the Canadians are going into this.
So yeah. With that, I just, we talked about RFAs. The only real UFA of note is, Dale Weiss doesn't count. Christian Follin, he doesn't count. There's really no UFA. Mm-hmm. So let's say for argument's sake, what did I say? 18 million?
Yes.
Let's say for argument's sake that you're down to 10 after signing Mete and Domi.
Okay.
Let's say.
Yeah.
And it's probably even more than that.
Whatever.
Let's say nine. Let's say nine.
Sure. Okay.
Let's say you're at 9 million.
Okay.
Are you a player in free agency, or do you try to take advantage of a team in a difficult situation if the cap doesn't go up?
I have three routes for this.
Because I think, and I think before I let you answer that, I think the only way the Montreal Canadiens are a player in free agency is through an offer sheet.
Okay.
Realistically, because I don't think they're going to get into a bidding war for Torey Krug. Mm-mm. And that's really the only UFA that stands out to me that would fill a hole for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
If you were speaking. Let's put it specifically.
Yeah.
Specifically, he's the only one that you can say, my God, Montreal Canadiens should be in on that. And I don't think they're going to get into that bidding war because that is probably going to be almost upwards of $9 million for Torey Krug.
Yeah, and I don't know how old he is, but I think he's getting closer to the age of 30.
Yeah,
so
he's closer to 30 than he is 20.
So that's not something that would mesh well with the Habs long term.
No. Yeah, because that's going to be 7 years, at 6 or 7 years, right?
Yeah.
No matter what he signs, it's as soon as you get. So I think the only way they're in a player in free agency is if they offer sheet Barzal or Dubois
or Sergachev.
Or Sergachev.
Let's not forget about Sergachev.
Yeah.
So the way I see it is that with $9 million and with the amount of holes that they have currently.
But can you offer sheet Sergachev? Not can you actually do it, but does that admit a mistake?
No. I wouldn't put it that way. I think at the end of the
day. Because offer sheeting Sergachev is going to cost you what? First and a third, maybe?
Depends on how much they give him.
Well, no, but like to make it worthwhile, right?
Well, what was the – well, it depends again.
Last year with it was a first, a second, and a third.
First, a second, and a third. Yeah. Signed him to 5 years at like over eight, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Canadiens were to go after Sergachev. It would be probably a number close to $7 million. And I don't mind giving him that. I think
he's only getting into it. He's just now showing us what he's going to be, right?
Right, exactly. And it's the same with Aho. Like I don't understand. And we've spoken about this, that a guy like Sebastian Aho, he's a guaranteed 30-plus goal guy a year, a number one center, 21 years old. You give him the money. You give him a salary or an AAV that will put Carolina in a predicament.
Yeah.
Where are we willing to take him on for the next 5 years, or should we just take the draft picks and keep our salary cap? You have to take the same approach if you approach a guy like Sergachev. Now, answering your question,
I think the only difference between Carolina and Tampa Bay is Tampa Bay is going to be tight with the cap.
Very tight, and you can take advantage of that.
Right? Carolina is always going to be able to match cap dollars.
Yes, exactly.
It was actual dollars that it was going to be a little bit of an issue.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Tampa Bay, it's the other way around. They have money coming out of places money shouldn't be coming out of.
Yeah.
But there's no cap space, or very little cap space.
With a lot of players that are going to be available.
Well, not just that, but this is, you're having it. I think this year you have Vasilevsky deal kicks in.
Yep.
Kucherov just signed the 9.5. There's a lot of big money there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of big money there.
And you've invested a lot of money on guys who have solely become secondary players.
Well, you're like, looking at Johnson, Killorn.
You can even put McDonough up there, a guy like
he's still highly valued there, but I think you're
I understand that, but
I think you're looking more at Yanni Gourde.
Yanni Gourde, Cedric Paquette, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, they have a lot of pieces that they need to resign. You know, you have guys like Cirelli,
I think they are very vulnerable to a Sergachev offer sheet. And probably a Cirelli offer sheet, too. Cirelli wouldn't be as big of an offer sheet, but I think I think someone would be probably tempted to sign him to an offer sheet and see what happens.
Right. And I think, like I said, you mentioned if it was a mistake if the Canadian, if like, would it be considered a mistake if they go after him, the Canadians, like in terms
of not a mistake, but
like in terms of the trade?
Yes.
I wouldn't think so. And the only reason why I say that is because, they're going after a position of need, right? And even though they traded Sergachev in the first place and they could have kept him all this time, the fact is you need to move on from it, and you need to realize that you need to address your team for the now and for the future. And if Marc Bergevin can end up with having Drouin, who's the guy he coveted, and then reacquiring Sergachev for a first round pick that we don't know what it could be whenever that draft occurs, he's addressing the need and he's acquiring a young top end defenseman. So I don't see it as a mistake. I see it more as just a guy being aggressive, taking advantage of the rules, and improving his team for the present and the future. So what that term will be is, who the fuck knows, but I would not be surprised that you try to put Tampa Bay in a very difficult position.
Because then switching over to Dubois a little bit, we talked about him. I don't think Columbus is going to be able to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
After losing who they lost last summer, they have the cap space to match.
Mm-hmm.
To me, you probably talk about it. You probably talk to the guy, but I don't think that gets done.
No.
I think Columbus has enough cap space to take care of that.
Yeah. I think, but there was another player you mentioned.
I'm just looking that up right now.
And that player is obviously Matt Barzal.
I just wanted to get an idea as to how much cap space they have. They are going to have, right now, the New York Islanders would have approximately $10 million in cap space.
Jeez, that's right on the edge.
With Devin Taves, Ryan Pulock as RFAs.
Oh, so it's going to be tough.
And then Barzal. The other ones are replaced. I mean, you have Matt Martin you can afford to let go. Broussard probably doesn't go back. Tom Kunackle you can afford to kind of say thanks, goodbye. Andy Green's a UFA that'll walk and then or retire, and then Thomas Greiss probably leaves also.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Ryan Pulock, that's a guy that they love down there. He's having a good year. That's a guy that Barry Trotz loves. You know, like if you were to offer, I would honestly, my offer sheet to Barzal would be $10 million.
Yep. Absolutely.
Enough. If you're going to offer sheet someone, make it count. Make it worthwhile.
He's a young, up-and-coming, established center.
He's 22 years old.
He's an exciting hockey player.
He'd be 23 by that point. He's going to be, oh, shit, his birthday is next week.
But you have to look at it like this. The Montreal Canadiens, even if a team like the Islanders have enough cap space, because we don't know what could happen from now until free agency.
In Matthew Barzal's three full-time seasons in the NHL, 85 points, 62 points, and this year in 68 games, he has 60 points.
Yeah.
And he reportedly doesn't like playing under Barry Trotz.
Yeah, because obviously he's more defensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm going to put it another way, like I was trying to say. A guy like Lula Morello, what are the odds of him actually giving a player $10 million a year?
Yeah, exactly.
He was obviously, I think he was very adamant on not signing John Tavares when he was in Toronto, because I think he left. it was very, very murky. I forget, but
there's also a lot of big contracts in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Lee at $7 million. Brock Nelson at $6 million. Jordan Everly at $5.5 million. Andrew Ladd at $5.5 million. Josh Bailey at $5 million. Kyle Clutterbuck at $3.5 million.
Jean-Gabriel
Pageau. They just gave Jean-Gabriel Pageau a $5 million contract. You're paying $6 million and $5.5 million for Johnny Boychuk and Nick Leddy, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
$5 million for Semyon Varlamov.
Yep.
There's a lot of big money there.
So I don't think they're going to be able to sign both, let alone Barzal.
Well, especially if Barzal gets offer sheeted. If not, they can negotiate a shorter term deal that brings the cap hit down and all that stuff. But if Barzal gets offer sheeted at something worth a damn,
mm-hmm.
then they're in a tough spot.
I'll even say that the Islanders are screwed if Barzal's offered somewhere like upwards of $8 million.
Yeah.
Even at $8 million.
Yeah, because again, Pulock is not signing a $2 million deal. He's coming off a $2 million deal.
Yeah, he's gonna sign at least $6.5-7 million.
Oh God, no, he's not that high.
Well, okay, between 5 and 6.
Really? I was thinking between 4 and 5, but okay.
Okay, well, even then.
Regardless, it's even if at the bare minimum, if it's 4, it's still $6 million.
Barzal's not going to sign a $6 million a year deal.
No, it's either that or they have to clear cap space. Right? But I mean, I look at it. Anders Lee has a full no trade clause. Brock mm-hmm. Nelson has a full no trade clause. Jordan Eberle has a full no trade clause. Andrew Ladd has a full no trade clause.
Yeah, and those are, you can sit, well, I mean, I think Lee and Nelson are quality players.
Yeah, absolutely. Even
a guy like Ladd, you know, that's a contract you have to get rid of.
But not just that, you trade him out, you're still, nobody's going to take that on without giving you a bad contract in return. We saw it at the trade deadline with the trade that almost went through for Zach Parise.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So you're not getting rid of Andrew Ladd by getting, someone will give you a 7th-round draft pick for it. That's not happening.
This isn't NHL.
This isn't NHL 20. And even then, it doesn't work.
NHL 12 it does.
Yeah, well, it's because Andrew Ladd's good in NHL 12.
but you get the gist. If we're talking about the Canadians using the cap space, you know, taking advantage of the cap space, you're able to improve your team dramatically.
And let me put it to you this way. Sorry, I don't mean to keep cutting you off.
Yeah.
But if, you know what I get, like, if you successfully manage to offer sheet Barzal,
mm-hmm.
you can then turn around and trade Domi for a defenseman.
Absolutely. You can, it opens up opportunities.
Absolutely.
So it's something that you really need to take into consideration. It's something that obviously is not against the rules. People shit on people who offer sheet. Hey, it's part of the CBA. You know, it's something that is agreed upon by the coaches, by the owners and the GMs that it could be allowed. And if a team wants to do it, hey, if I'm having an opportunity to sign either a top end center or a top end defenseman, why not? It all factors in like that. So if a guy like Sergachev does make it to free agency, if a guy like Matt Barzal makes it to free agency, take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
If those are players you covet, even what you can also do is with the teams that these players' rights are owned by, you can probably, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a saying, but you can basically discuss with them that I understand you're in this situation. Let me help you out. You know, we talk about this, acquiring a certain asset by taking on a contract. Hey, it's something that they can use as well.
We saw it with when they acquired Joel Armia.
But I think they can get a better player than Armia.
No, but that's what I'm... Yes, absolutely. But, you know, they brought on Steve Mason, mm-hmm. bought him out, and that gave them... that they were able to bring in Joel Armia through that.
Of course.
I think it's going to be an interesting summer for the Montreal Canadiens because there's potential to be significant roster turnover at mm-hmm. key positions.
Yeah.
Now we just have to wait to see if Marc Bergevin can actually get it done.
Oh, I'm hoping for it.
I know.
For crying out loud.
Lambros, if the season were to be canceled
mm-hmm.
for the remainder of regular season, who would be the winner of the Hart Trophy in your mind?
That's always tough. I remember we always used to do this, and we always did these like what ifs or like who is the MVP, and it's always difficult because.
I mean, back when I told you that Patrick Mahomes was going to win MVP, and you guys shit on me saying it was all Drew Brees.
Yeah.
The year that Patrick Mahomes won MVP.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to put that on the record.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Josh is turning into a Chiefs fan, but
dear God,
Be that as it may, we all know where everyone else's loyalty is, not like Josh's. But
all I said was nonetheless was going to win the MVP. But okay,
nonetheless, I think the MVP of this year. Oh man, give me a sec.
I have the points leaders right in front of me.
I'm not looking at points leaders. MVP, right?
But that's what it's going to come down to, Lambros. You know it always does.
But it's my opinion.
Oh, okay. And then, yeah, sure. Who would be your MVP?
Artemi Panarin. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. It's my if the New York Rangers were to make the playoffs, I'd Artemi Panarin to me also. Yes, absolutely. But the problem with this is for some reason, the voters of the Hart Trophy think that one of the prerequisites is to be in the playoffs.
If we're talking playoffs, let me look at the.
My point is this. Usually, the winner of the Hart Trophy, the most valuable player, is playing on a team that made the playoffs.
Okay. Fair enough.
Which takes out a significant part of what the trophy actually is. You are the most valuable player. So basically, let's say Artemi Panarin, to me, is a very solid choice. Mm-hmm. If you take out Artemi Panarin of the Rangers lineup, are they anywhere near a playoff spot this year?
Not even close.
Thank you. That right there should be reason enough to tell you that he should get serious consideration for it.
Absolutely.
And I look at Leon Draisaitl, who probably is going to be who's going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
Leading the league with 110 points.
But he's in a similar situation as Panarin. Because I don't know where Edmonton would be because they had McDavid out for a while and he stepped up.
Yep.
So to me, those are the top two.
And then, because it's the NHL, McDavid's going to get the other nomination. because it's just
I think it's going to go to McKinnon.
Really? I was thinking Pasternak.
Yeah, Pasternak too. But again, I don't think Pasternak deserves it. Main reason being, obviously Boston has run away with the league at one point. Basically, they're leading the league. They're first in the NHL, and they have a 6-point cushion with one game in hand on St. Louis in terms of points, which is fantastic. But they only have 14 losses this year. Oh my God!
I know.
Shout out to Karask, by the way. He's helped me out in my fantasy hockey league, but that's been put on hold, so I can't be declared the winner yet.
Have you looked into that?
I don't know what to do. I should just text the commissioner and just say, hey, just not give me the win here.
Give me the win and step down.
I would say the MVP for Boston is Tuukka Rask. I think Panarin has been
sensational. Does Tuukka Rask get considered for the Hart Trophy?
In my mind, yes. But he's not going to. Because unless he had a Carey Price-like season, he's not going to get a nominee for the Hart.
Jesus, 2.12 goals against. And,
how many games?
929 save percentage. It won't let me click on him. Goaltender, Zinchenko, this won't be long.
Yeah.
I'm coming. I hate the NHL.com website. This in... 41 games played.
Yeah, you see, it's not enough.
I know.
That's the issue. And kudos on Boston for balancing out Rask and Halak.
Well, kudos on them to having... Tuukka Rask is 33 years old?
Yeah, he's same age as Price. They were both taking the same draft.
That's true.
You know who's also taken in that draft?
Who?
Jonathan Quick, third round.
That's true. This is true.
From Avon Old Farms.
Yes. Good old Avon.
Yeah, you don't know where that is.
No fucking clue.
But again, my opinion, Artemi Panarin definitely should be given the Hart Trophy. What he's been able to do on that team. You know, we talk about like a player worth his contract. This guy's done it and ran with it, basically. Absolute dynamite on that team.
Okay, so in your mind, you would, if you were able to choose right now, you would choose Artemi Panarin.
First would be Panarin. Second would be Drysdale.
And who's who comes out in third?
Third, I mentioned it. I would say MacKinnon.
All right, I agree with you. What I think is going to happen is it's going to be Drysdale, Panarin, and McDavid. But what I would do is the same as you, except substitute MacKinnon with McDavid, because as I said earlier, the NHL cannot live in a world where Connor McDavid is not nominated for the Hart Trophy. So
don't be surprised a guy like Matthews gets nominated.
Oh, fuck off. No, they were talking about, the Selke. No, was it the Selke there that's a two-way forward?
Lady Bing.
The Lady Bing.
No. Lady Bing is the player who's the gentleman. Yeah, Selke
is the two-way forward.
Yeah.
Yes.
Him over Dano. I don't know about that.
Patrice Bergeron.
Yeah.
Jonathan Davis. Yeah, but you know it's going to be Bergeron. It's always Bergeron. I think he's won it the last 10 years.
No. Who won it last
year? I don't care.
Barkov's available. Ryan O'Reilly.
Yeah.
O'Reilly won it last year, no?
Yeah. Austin Matthews. Anyway, who wins the Jack Adams, Lambros? Who's been the best coach this year?
That's always fucking tough to mention. It's to me, it's a two-way tie. Dave Tippett? Got to give him a lot of merit for what he's been able to do.
Dave Tippett fan.
I love Dave Tippett. But again, give him credit. Edmonton was shit last few years with that talent.
This is true.
But I think the person who will win it is Alain Vigneault. Give this man credit.
Yep.
You know, talking about a team in Philadelphia that I think we can both agree always had a shit ton of talent.
Never could put it together.
Never were able to find a goalie. They got Carter Hart now. I always call him like that. Carter Hart. And he's been sensational. But give credit to Vigneault. Give credit, obviously, to the veteran coaches on that bench.
It's a veteran staff. That's a veteran Vigneault, staff.
Vigneault, Therrien, and Mike Yeo.
Yep.
You know, they have great experience together. They have a lot of playoff experiences. Nonetheless, my opinion, Alain Vigneault, and then Dave Tippett.
Can I tell you who my three would be?
Who?
You want to take a guess?
I think one of them is Tortorella.
No, I love John Tortorella, but no.
Bruce Cassidy?
Yeah.
Okay. Is the second one in the East or in the West?
In the East.
In the East.
And this isn't you're like, it's just my top three. They're in no particular order for right now.
Okay, so it's three people.
Yes.
Okay, so the first one is Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah.
Second one, is it Quinn?
No.
Okay. Reardon?
Nope.
Okay, Vigneault.
Yeah.
Okay, and the third. If you tell me, like, Sheldon Keefe, I'm going to lose my shit.
I'm going to punch myself in the mouth.
Sheldon Keefe?
No.
Oh.
I would punch myself in the mouth.
Oh, okay. Rod Brendamore?
I do love Rod Brendamore, but no.
Oh man, is it Sullivan?
No.
You said it's in the East, right?
No, I was talking about Vigneault.
Okay. So the third one's in the East. It's Pete DeBoer, isn't it?
Oh, God, no. You can't win Jack Adams after you get fired.
Craig Berube?
He won it last year.
No, he didn't.
He didn't? Who won it last year?
Wasn't it...
Are you sure? How does Craig Berube
It was Bill Peters.
No, it was not.
Jack. Yes, it was. No, it was wasn't. Bill Peters, because it was his first year in Calgary.
You're kidding me.
It has to be. I think I'm right.
Barry
Trotz. Yeah, okay, he was second.
Oh, okay. Well, then, fuck, I could have sworn.
Is it Paul Maurice?
Yeah.
It's Paul Maurice.
I like Paul Maurice.
You know what? I can see why.
Look at what that he had to do this year.
I can see why, I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
that's a fair thing, and I think I've always mentioned it when it came to excuses. You know, this team, like, I mean, come on.
Oh God, they don't have any
top four, top six defensemen, man. That is incredible.
Now, I think that Bruce Cassidy would win it.
Really?
Because they get excited with the whole top of the league, big thing, and all that stuff. I think Bruce Cassidy would win it. With Vigneault coming in third and Paul Maurice... Vigneault coming in second and Paul Maurice as the third.
You see, the way I see it is different. Because Barry Trotz won it last year, and where the Islanders were the year before that, and you saw the complete turnover and a complete improvement, I think that's why Vigneault will take it. Because Boston made it to the Cup final
last
year.
That's why I agree with you, and that's why I would want Vigneault to win it. I just don't think people are going to be able to look over the success. Boston put a hell of a season together.
Absolutely.
And that's
But let's not kid ourselves. Boston has always been a very good team, and they made the Cup final last year. You know, Philadelphia was a non-playoff team yet last year, and with pretty much the same team, apart from a couple of guys added, this guy brought this team at this point 1 point behind Washington.
I agree with all of you. I agree with all of that. I just think people are going to get excited by the 44 wins and less.
Okay.
I understand. Listen, Lambros, I agree with you. If it were up to me, Alain Vigneault would win.
Yeah. I still think he will win.
I hope so.
I mean, you talk about like Boston has 44 wins, Philadelphia has 41 wins. I mean, obviously points wise and like the Boston has less regulation.
Boston has 12 win losses in overtime.
Yeah, so that's the difference,
that's
right?
Major.
Now.
St. Louis lost 10 times in overtime.
Yeah. This is why they have so much points. You know, you gain those extra points just by those making it to overtime or shootouts. Yeah. So in terms of wins, Boston has more regulation wins than Philadelphia. They have a +7 on that, but 41 wins, 44 wins is not it's not so far off. So I think Vigneault, what he's been able to do, is a lot more noteworthy than what Cassidy has done with pretty much obviously the same team and a team that's already made it to the Cup just a year ago. So I think that should be taken into consideration as well. If we're talking Jack Adams in terms of the best coaching performance, you got to look at where the team was before this coach came in and then where they were at the end of the season. I mean, that's the only way you could evaluate it, because if that's the case, John Cooper should have won the Jack Adams last year.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Yep.
So.
Yep. Lambros, it's getting late. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's do it.
We'll be back next week to talk about God knows what.
Hopefully there's something.
Hopefully. And in the meantime, everybody stay safe.
Wash your hands.
Wash your fucking hands. don't go anywhere. Stay home. I know it's long. I know it's boring. Trust me, I know. But you just got to do what you got to do for your own health, for the health of the loved ones around you. And really for society, do your part and get your shit together. I'm talking to you, millennials. Stop going places. Stay home. Fuck. Lambros, it's always a pleasure talking hockey with you.
Likewise.
On a weekly basis. I will let you go back to doing God knows what you were doing tonight. Probably binge watching something on Netflix.
Crave, actually.
You're on Crave.
Yep.
Good for you.
Thank you.
That's probably the only streaming service I don't have an account for. Because other than that, if I can pay for it, chances are I'm on it. In terms of, dear God, I have so many subscriptions.
You also have The Zone.
I don't anymore.
You don't?
No, I canceled it after the football season.
Oh, okay. Are you going to forget it once the football season's back?
Maybe, because I like to watch games at the same time. You know, I like to watch
a game on the computer
and a game on the TV, so maybe.
Lovely.
And it's also, The Zone is also really practical when it comes to the NFL preseason.
Mm-hmm.
All the games are there. A lot of games aren't on TV for preseason.
Yeah, Josh likes to do his scouting for...
I like to be prepared. I like to be prepared.
He likes to talk football with me.
I do. I have Disney Plus. Dear God, I have Netflix.
Oh, I don't have Disney Plus yet.
No?
No.
It's not all that great, honestly. Other than reliving your childhood.
They have the Marvel movies.
They do, but you have to be into that.
You're not into that?
You know me. I'm a soppy love story kind of guy.
Yeah, a lot of countries. A lot of countries.
A lot of that. Yeah. So I rewatched all of the Sweet Life of Zack and Cody and the Sweet Life on Deck.
Okay.
Because that was my childhood. That was that.
To each their own, Joshua.
Those were my go-tos.
Not even things I just put on the TV.
Oh God, go-tos. No. It was religiously every week. It was the Sweet Life. It was Zoe 101. And it was Hannah Montana.
Good shit.
And I can't believe I just said that on a podcast. Ooh, okay. Before I say any other nonsense, we're getting the fuck out of here. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Look for us next week. We'll be back with hopefully plenty more to talk about. Lambros,
yep.
Thanks a lot. Let's get out of here.
Have a good night, everybody.